Blog Talk Radio.
Medicine is one of the most difficult, fast-paced, yet rewarding paths you can take. You can set out on your own and navigate the student loans, the bureaucracies, and systems that define a typical medical career. Or you can apply for the U.S. Army's Health Professions Scholarship Program and launch yourself into a medical career like no other. Your tuition will be completely covered, and when you graduate med school, you'll learn from and work with some of the most elite minds in medicine. That's the Army difference. Learn more and apply today at goarmy.com/HPSP.
Blog Talk Radio.
Sandy Rogers, and I will serve as your tour guide as we journey together tonight. Thank you for being a part of this event. I am so excited and that you decided to join in today. So let's get started. Let's take a moment and get ourselves prepared for the call. The affirmation for today is as we enter into this month of April, let our focus be that of staying present, not retreating to thoughts of yesterday or hopes of tomorrow, but stay in the gift of the present moment. Actually, the present moment is all we have. However, we can exchange it with our thoughts of days gone by or planning for the future. So let us be centered in the now moment. It is always, always our choice. Our affirmation going forward is, my power is in this present moment. I wanted to take a moment also to honor the energy and the love of our ancestors. And if we can just take a moment right now, I actually want to dedicate this show to my younger brother, Rudy Otis Brown, who was born on this day in 1957, and he departed this earth in 1980. But for all our ancestors, thank you. Thank you, ancestors. It's all about life. It's all about love. It's all about wellness. The mission of this show, Life, Love, and Wellness, is uplifting ourselves, loving ourselves, and being genuinely involved in our wellness. To begin the series, our topic today is what if we lived with no falsehoods? Audience, you are invited to join in the discussion. All comments are welcome, and every voice will be heard with complete acceptance and no judgment. When we tell our children lies, referring to the existence of these make-believe characters, yet chastise them for lying, how do you think this affects them when they learn the truth? How did you react when you found out? Did you ignore it? Were you upset? Were you hurt? Or did you begin that process of not believing what your authority figures were telling you? Did it begin with your parents and then reach out to the others, your teachers, other elders in the communities? What did that do for you? And you know the characters I'm talking about, Santa Claus, who can be larger than God in some households, the thought that we tell our children, God sees everything that you do, and he's making a list, and, you know, your gifts will depend on what God, what Santa Claus sees, and you have to write a letter to Santa Claus, and, you know, you're worshiping Santa Claus for gifts. And then we have the Easter Bunny, which takes on a whole different personality of its own. And we have the Tooth Fairy, where the child, I know I did, you put your tooth under the pillow and you're praying that you have money when you wake up in the morning. Or, you know, we have any number of other make-believe heroes that we put in front of our children. But what or who was the source of those lies? And how did that really make you feel? What do our children feel? Does that impact them negatively? Do they begin to distrust the system, distrust their parents? Do they become angry on the inside? Do they anger? Do they show out in school or misbehave in school? What? And yet we want to chastise our children, punish them, do any number of things, bad talk about them to our parents, to our friends, and most times that's in the presence of the children. What does that do to the children when they know, when they find out that you have actually been the one lying to them, and now you have the nerve, the gumption, the audacity to chastise them for the very same thing that you've been doing? What lies or falsehoods did your family have about life? Did they have about what you were capable of achieving? What limitations were put on you as a child, as a teenager, as a young adult? And that's by from your family. Your family have routines and laws. The family has a set of rules. The tribe has a set of rules that you're to obey and not ever go past the rules of the tribe. And when you do that, you find that you are up against a lot of negativity, and then you realize that it was a lie. It was not the truth coming. There are no limitations. It's only what you're capable of doing, so that those falsehoods start in our family. What about the education system? As African Americans, our contributions to the history of the United States when I was growing up was completely eliminated from the textbooks. And that could be called a little white lie. It could be called an elimination from the textbooks and from the story of our history. But it's a lie, because we were very instrumental, and not just the African American race, but a lot of the immigrants that came over that worked on the plantations or that built the cities, that made bricks, that constructed the buildings, built this country, but eliminated from the country's history. That's a falsehood. and our children are still not learning the truth. It's better, but it's still not all inclusive of what we should have in our history books as to how this country became a nation. Our religions. I know it's a touchy subject, but our religions have falsehoods encrypted in some of the language that they use. Religion, spirituality would be all inclusive of everyone. And I know that there's scripture that says, judge not, lest ye be judged. But we have leaders of religions that speak against certain groups of people, certain sects of people from the pulpit, or from the lectern, from the head of the temples and the mosque, dehumanize people. That's a falsehood. That's a lie. And it's coming from out of the religious leaders. Maybe you heard some falsehoods coming from out of your community as to what was allowed, what you can ascribe to, what your dreams should be or what they could not be, what they should not be. And then we have the business world that has their own set of rules and instructions on how to do jobs, which may or may not be correct, which may or may not utilize a person's gifts or strength. But nonetheless, this is where we go and where we spend our time and where we spend our energy in hopes of an equal return and a paycheck for the services that we render. So these are just some of the areas where falsehoods could have their origins in our family, with our friends, within our educational system, within religion, within the community where we were raised, or even the corporation or the business that we work at as we get to that stage in our lives. But I'm just real curious as to the whole reasoning. Why were these characters made up? The Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, the Boogeyman even. I think the Boogeyman was to keep people or keep children in line so they wouldn't get out of bed at night, and they were lied to with that, that there was something that was in the dark that was waiting to harm them. Or then maybe not. Maybe the people that told Boogeyman, maybe they really felt that there was something to fear in the darkness. And maybe that's where that came from. But Santa Claus, I want to go back to Santa Claus because to me that's a biggie. That's the one where we have so much, we hold so much over our children's head with that thought of a Santa Claus. And Santa Claus has this strength and this power to see in everybody's household exactly what you're doing. Santa Claus has the magic to, with his reindeers and his sleigh, can deliver gifts all over everywhere. and we teach this to our children, and we get mad at them when they don't believe it. Caller, let me see. We have a speaker here. Caller, go ahead.
Hello, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Okay. All right, Sandy. Well, thank you for having me. And I'm going to turn down my computer. I got you doing the topic, okay? I wrote down some notes here. For children, do you feel that is sometimes it's age appropriateness that people kind of mislead for comfort? Like I know even if they're adults who really don't know if there's a heaven or angels, if a child passed away and they don't really know, they don't necessarily believe in, they might say, well, they're in heaven. And sometimes it may be just to draw out imagination of the child. I know for adults I have more of a stronger perspective on it. For adults, I think when people lie to an adult, an adult to an adult. For me, I don't know if it can be more of a comfort, but I think as the recipient of a lie, the person is doing, when they do that, it takes away my power of choice. And just to tell you a story, I remember my brother was telling about, I shouldn't have said my brother, he might end up listening. was telling me how they was lying to a female companion and that she believed it. And I said, well, what isn't that the intent of the lie? So the intent of the lie is to mislead and take away her power of choice. Why don't you try telling them the truth? So for adults, and I had this conversation with a friend, when a person lies, adult to adult, to me it's limiting or taking away my power of choice to choose based on what is true, okay? But as a child, I can see a broader spectrum of just variations of why. Maybe it is to take their mind off of the truth, which may be unbearable, or to kind of give it in little nuggets, mislead just to test them to see how their thought process is. I can see a variety of reasons and where it, you know, but I tell you what about the Santa Claus. You were talking about the Santa Claus. I don't know how long I believed in that before my mother just kind of knocked it through. But you start to question the rationality of the possibility, somebody taking it through the roof and or the chimney and dropping it down. So children are still not clear on it. There's a variety in independent cases, individual cases. But adults, I do feel that when a person lied to me as an adult, they have taken away my power of choice to choose based on the truth. They're trying to mislead me into thinking a certain way, and I don't particularly care for that at all. So I just want to hear your perspective on that.
Thank you, Phyllis, and I appreciate your comments. The reason why I'm bringing the question to you guys or to the front is to have a discussion around that because it's something that has just intrigued me, and I wanted to know how it affects our children. And I don't know if we as adults have really thought about the consequences of the little white lies on how that could affect. I do see your point with it being a tool to use to increase the imagination, but I'm just wondering if we couldn't take a different type of activity to do that, to achieve that same goal. Do we need to use a lie to increase the skills of imagination? Can we not go with a different type of activity, maybe artistic, creative type of activity that would do the same thing? And I agree with you when it comes to the heaven and hell part that there are people, children, adults of all ages that still wrestle with that. And I remember I have was at a funeral at a of a older person who was not a sickly person, but when she died, her family shared the notion or the belief that she died of natural causes. That's what the doctor said to her, said to them. And the grandson, he wrestled with that for a long time, and he's like, so what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
I know that when a person gets shot or, you know, when they get stabbed, that I understand that, but what does death by natural causes, what does that mean? And so that's another one of those statements that we just use and we don't really question. We just allow it to be the deciding factor of a situation. But it was a perfect thought to me. And so that's what this is about, is just having some dialogue around the things that we just do automatically, you know.
Do you feel that sometimes people do what they know and they just don't know any better, so there's not enough material out there, or they're not accessing enough material to teach them a different technique? I just thought about that as you were speaking.
I totally agree, yes.
Okay.
Because, you know, I beg your pardon?
Oh, no, I was just inquiring.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, we have a tendency, all people have a tendency, I believe, to be a little on the lazy side when it comes to researching and going against the norm of what's taught. And so you have, there are a lot of information out, and especially with the creation of the internet and the Google and the different methods that you can go on and search for the a different perspective on some of the topics or some of the things that are taught in our schools or that is spread publicly on the news stations. And we trust that the media is telling us the truth, and that is not always the situation. And so we have, we certainly have a large majority of people that believe in a certain concept or believe in doing things a certain way, certainly because that's what they know. So to answer your question, yes, it is by, I want to say, a lack of choice, but only from the standpoint that they've not done the research or done the work for themselves, and so they're relying upon someone else to tell them the truth or tell them what the situation is, how to think on a certain situation.
Well, I do agree with that. I call it lazy parenting. Well, parenting, I call it lazy parenting. But thank you. Thank you for allowing
me to
be a guest.
Well, thank you. Thank you for
talking. Okay,
I appreciate the time. So we're talking today on what if we lived with no falsehoods. And those falsehoods have been termed little white lie. Phyllis made it a point to say we can use that as talking in regards to expanding our imagination. And so the conversation is around how does that affect not only our children, but how does it affect us as well as we go about the business of our day-to-day living? Are we consciously involved and what we accept as the truth? Are we actively involved in learning more for ourselves because we have more tools that we can utilize in this day and time? Or do we accept what we've been told, without any further question. Food for thought. Just want to know, how do we justify the continuation, perpetuating untruths or falsehoods . Or is that really a concern? Do we really want to continue on this road of believing or feeling that this does not have an impact on our children or on ourselves? And where was the source? What's the source of the untruth, the falsehood? And could that possibly be part of the reason that our children are suffering with different issues, with different problems, behavioral problems? And I see we have another caller here. Let's see. Caller, you're on air. Did you have a question?
Caller.
Okay, we'll go back to the call. So the little white lies. And what make them little and what make them white? And does that really have any impact on what's being told, what's being shared with us as the truth? So does the size of it make it less? Color of it make it less? And should we continue sharing these falsehoods? Should we continue using these make-believe characters of Santa Claus, a big fat Santa Claus in a red suit with a white beard and white hair and big belly? And if you ever notice, the first time you put your child on a Santa Claus lap, they cry. Almost 100% of the time your child will cry because they're innocent. They see that this is not a real person. They don't believe in that Santa Claus stuff until we make them believe in it. And that is what is really puzzling. I know I did it, so I'm not coming from a place of I didn't do this. No, my child and my two stepdaughters, they also were put on Santa Claus's lap, you know, to tell Santa Claus what you wanted. And they cried. They cried, but they still, they had to do it because that was what I believed in at the time, that that's what we're supposed to do with our children, is to have them to believe in the Santa Claus and the boogeyman and all of that. But now, you know, they say with wisdom or with age come wisdom. So now that I'm looking back, I'm just bringing this up, like, really, what does that look like? Child's mind, I can almost see a child, you know, that you have chastised, have spanked, have put into time out, put in a corner, put in a place of correction because they lied. And when this becomes a problem, so this is an habitual practice with you and the child. The child lies, they're in timeout. The child lies, the child gets spanked. The child lies, and then the day comes when the child finds out that mom or dad or mom and dad or grandmama and them all been lying about Santa Claus, the boogeyman, the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy, all of that. I have another caller I'm going to take, and then we're going to take a quick break. Okay, caller, you're on air.
Okay, I had to call back in because you said what makes it white. I had to laugh at that. Yes, I think the fact that we associate color with, and I'm still trying to figure out, I think there's a pureness to say we associate white with pureness. But I think because white reflects all color. Okay, so it's supposed to be pure. There's actually no color. If we look at the color white, it actually reflects all of the visible color spectrum. Okay, however, I don't think that's why we call it white lie. Okay, I think sometimes we associate more with a priority, a more dominant. And I think when we use the contrast of something being a white lie versus first blacklisted, I think we're associating the white in that respect, not to a color, say that there's a greatness in white, whereas there's a deficit in blackness. You know, but I do, but there's, and I think that's the way it's looked at more or less when we use the term white and black in our society. It's more of a dominance versus inferiority instead of looking at it in terms of the visible light spectrum, whereas white reflects all, so there's no absorption, so there's a purity in it. So so in that respect, I laugh when you said the white lie, because I think in society we have come to associate with white, a white versus a white lie versus something being blacklisted or the black sheep in the family, not with the pureness but with dominance and recessiveness. So I had to laugh and call back in when you said, why do we call it a white lie? Because we want to say that it's not, it's pure, and but when we use the term white and black, we're not using it in that respect. We're doing it with dominance. Okay, it's okay to have a white lie as opposed to a black lie. Okay, so it's more acceptable or something. So I just had to say that.
Well, I appreciate you for calling back in. And, you know, you brought up a very interesting point as well when you spoke of the white being reflective or deflective of so that it doesn't stick. And so maybe that's one of the reasons why then that we believe that it's okay to say that or to do that with the little white lie, is that it won't, hopefully it won't stick to the child's psychic or stick to the child. I'm not sure, you know, exactly the reason why, but I that's a different way to look at it, though, that white lie versus, you know, it just being a lie. So I appreciate your perspective on that a great deal.
Okay.
And that's
welcome.
What this is all about. So go ahead.
No, I just laughed. Answer, you're welcome.
Oh, yeah. No, it's just because, you know, that's what this is about, is opening up, allowing the different perspectives to be heard, and just, you know, for some thought about why does this really happen? Why does it take place? And that's an excellent point that you brought up about the color, the, you know, blacklisted and the white lie. So, yeah, I appreciate that very much.
Okay, you're welcome. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So we're going to take a short break, and we will return in 2 minutes.
I don't wish no more. No, no. No, I wanna. No, I coulda. No, I shoulda. No, I don't wish no more. I don't wish no more.
It's my passion, it's my pride. Every day I wake up and I pray. Oh Lord, I thank you. This is my day, it's my day. My day to create. My life exactly as I desire for it to be. I meditate on love and peace. I meditate knowing your will is my will. So I don't wish no more.
I don't wish no more.
No, I don't wish.
Welcome back. That was Anthony, a.k.a. King, singing I Don't Wish No More. Hello, and my name is Sandy Rogers, and welcome back to Life, Love, and Wellness. So I'll be serving as your guide in this discussion as we journey together tonight. I really, really appreciate you for being a part of the show, and thank you for calling in and participating. We're talking tonight on the topic, what if we live with no falsehood? And in that, in our discussion, we're talking about how the repeated use or the practice of participating in using Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, the Easter Bunny, the Boogeyman, as real characters or as heroes in the case of Santa Claus particularly. If you're joining us by computer and would like to call in and ask a question, feel free to do that. The call-in number is 516-531-9819. So we've cited some emotions. We've cited some abilities as to how the continued use of falsehoods could affect our thinking, our relating to each other, and especially with our children. And so the little white lie, the innocent lies that we repeat without even a second thought. You know, how many times have we in the past or in the present will talk about make your list for Santa Claus. What do you want Santa Claus to bring you? Or put your tooth under the pillow so the tooth fairy can bring you some money. We still practice. We still participate in some of that. When we extend that, I was actually at a medical facility earlier today, and in talking with one of the other patients there, we were talking about how the medical industry has duped us into believing a lot of the diagnosis and the need for different items is how I'm going to say it. But we're believing this as being the truth, and more is coming out on a daily basis or more frequently than that about what is really going on within the medical industry and the prescription, the pharmaceutical companies, the vaccines. Every day there's something new that's hitting the internet or hitting places where you can do the research for yourself. Mercury fillings,
can be very deadly. They do cause heavy metal poison toxins in your system, especially if you drink hot liquids like coffee or tea. That like activates that the mercury, the toxins in the mercury, so that you're just like overdosing on this heavy metal toxins in your system every time you have a cup of coffee or every time you have a cup of tea, green tea even. You know, it doesn't really matter. It's the hot liquids that's being held in your mouth that's generating those toxins to be released into your system. And then now we're learning that vaccines, the childhood vaccines that are mandated by the government, that all children must have, causes autism, and it causes other problems within children. And then that's a good one too. How does the government become the authority over vaccines? How can they be the ones that say that every child that enters into the educational system, into a public school, has to have a vaccination, especially when it's already been proven that these are not the healthiest substances to go into a person's body, especially a child's body? And one of the documentaries that I've recently had an opportunity to get some knowledge from, they said that the children, when we were coming up, or in the earlier years, when I was coming up, the vaccinations consisted of 6 diseases that were included in what we were vaccinated against or protected from. But now it's up to 26, and that those additional illnesses or diseases that they're including in the vaccinations is what's causing the additional health concerns with the children. And when you see these babies that have been vaccinated and they're just, you know, they're dying, their nervous systems are just permanently damaged. It's incredible. It's just incredible. We have prescription drugs are the second leading cause of death in our teenagers. Over prescription drugs. And I believe in our elders. I don't know if the study will ever be done, but I believe that the medical industry, consciously or unconsciously, willingly or unwillingly, prescribe an abundance of pills to our elder community. Not sure if it's for the insurance money, if it's for the pharmaceutical dollars. I'm just saying that most elders that you see have a whole garbage bag full of pills that's been prescribed to them from a doctor, from a licensed doctor, to take to ensure that they are healthy. It's been proven that there are studies that have been done to be able to give you the interaction of 2 drugs. So not all drugs, but there are some drugs that are being tested for their compatibility with another drug to see how that, how they react with one another. But there is not one documented research, not one, that's done with a mixture of 3 prescriptions or more. So no medical information is available for people, again, particularly our elders, who are given an overload of pills of prescriptions for whatever they call, whatever they deem is necessary for an elder, for our seniors. No one can tell them that this will not cause you additional health problems. So the elder is taking the pills thinking that this is going to cause them to get better and feel better and be better, but it doesn't because, well, I shouldn't say that. I'm going to back up off of that one for a minute. But there's no proof is what I want to say. There is no proof that a combination of more than three drugs or three or more drugs, there's no proof that that combination will make someone feel better. So I just want to put that out there as well. So our lives start with very innocent practices. So we think, so we do with the Santa Claus, the boogeyman, the tooth fairy, and the Easter bunny, and a list of others. Just I'm just citing the most popular ones, the ones that most people would be familiar with, because you have certain superstitions in each culture. You have certain limitations that normally are mandated by a lie. We have ways of behaving that's predicated on what the community accepts as being a proper and adequate, well, proper etiquette. So it spills over. It spills over one to another to another to another area of our life. And so where does it stop? We know it starts back, way back in the home as little children. That's where it got started. And so maybe we've become immune to the fact that we are living a lie, that we are repeating a lie. And we've told the lie for so long that we truly believe it. We believe that it's true. And so we're not as alert maybe now to what really is the truth. We have become so numb by the TV, by the media, by the radio, by Facebook, by all of the social media. We've become so numb at disregarding that power that's within us that knows the truth. We don't pay it any attention. But there's something in us that's saying, you know, that's not quite right. That's why the child, when you put a baby on Santa Claus's lap for the first time, they start crying. They're scared to death of this creature. And you're telling them, oh, no, no, this is who's going to bring you your toys. You got to love them. You got to love them. Smile for the camera. And that baby is like, no way. I'm a little kid, and I know better than that. Are you serious? So the more, I believe, the more we give way to the lie as innocent, as it doesn't really matter, that it doesn't affect us in the long run, that it's okay, that we become desensitized to our inner power, our inner knowing, our inner wisdom. And that's how we can go about and watch the inhuman fighting that's going on in the world, around the world, how we can watch children go hungry, how we can allow this stuff to just be in the front of us on a prompter, on a TV prompter, on a screen, and we can see it and we're not affected by it because of the lies have just numbed our inner spirit. And when we turn that around and we call it for what it is, we can reconnect with the purity of our essence, of who we are. As Phyllis mentioned earlier in the call, imagination. Well, we don't have to lie to help increase a person's imagination. We can be creative in that. And we can honor who we are, and we can honor the wisdom that we have and live a life more on purpose. So just a thought, just a conversation that I wanted to start, and hopefully you found a little gem here or there, or at least something that would have you to think about the topic for tonight. What if we live with no falsehoods? What if we told the truth? What if the truth was our means of communication with one another? Being just glorious myself. So I want to open the floor to any caller that would like to voice a comment or have a question. Caller, is there anyone that would like to offer any suggestions? We got a caller here. All right, caller, you're on air.
Hi, Sandy. This is Gloria.
Hi, Gloria.
I wasn't real sure you could hear me. I really appreciate the discussion this evening, and I just wanted to pull out a few points or nuggets that I gathered. The things that I have gathered from the discussion is that we grow up with these misconceptions, and the misconceptions make it difficult for us to live our best lives. You know, when you were mentioning Santa Claus, I could have assured you that there was a Santa Claus when I was growing up, because my parents had to go out to their vehicle to get some of the packages. And in coming in, with it being living in the north and there being snow on the ground, there was footprints. And those footprints, to me, were a definite indicator that there truly was a Santa Claus. Now, I'm familiar with the fact that supposedly Santa Claus was supposed to come down the chimney, but we did not have a chimney at our home. And that should have been a red flag. And I think that there are times when there are red flags in our lives and we don't pay attention to it because we are not educated to do so. And I think a lot of times our parents just pass on what they have been given. You know, we can only do what we know, or only extend what we know, and people operate out of what they know or what they think they know. And there's a religion that has many different celebrations, and the celebrations are based on events, historical events for their religion. And in Christianity, we've tried to parallel some of these events. And I think that with that, those parallels, you know, we have to make appeasement, or we're trying to appease a certain nature so that we can have something to celebrate. Christmas is, you know, that event that we utilize in, I guess, the secular world, if you will, to have a time of celebration. And then Santa Claus is the character that we, you know, cause for the children to, if you will, worship or admire. And as parents, we impress upon them that he sees all and he knows all, and he knows if you've been bad or good. And and children, because they don't have any other basis for information, especially when they're younger, other than their parents or maybe relatives and or friends, then they come to believe this. And these are the people that they trust the most. And in trusting, yeah, it makes a difference, because the people that we trust the most, we feel like they won't deceive us, yet the deceptions are very real. Something that wasn't mentioned, and I think that it's a characterization, it's the myth of happily ever after. I grew up listening to so many stories about living happily ever after, living happily ever, and they lived happily ever after. And I'm still waiting for happily ever after to come. And I don't know if that's supposed to be in the afterlife or if it's something that we experience here on earth. So I think sometimes in these falsehoods, it continues. It's a perpetuation. And, you know, we grow up to, you know, believe that most people are good. So then, you know, the children are continued to be deceived that, okay, well, I can go off with this person. I'm so sorry for this noise. I can go off with this person because most people are good. And with that, I'm going to pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Gloria. I really appreciate you bringing in the additional, the myth about living happily ever after, especially when we consider that there's normally no training or little, if any, guidance provided for you to live that happily ever after. It's like, okay, well, let's just say it, and maybe they'll be the ones that can, you know, mysteriously grab hold to that that myth or that vision, whatever that vision is. I don't really know that we know what it would look like to live happily ever after. And, you know, is that by yourself? Is that with a partner? You know, is that your spirituality? Exactly what does that involve? So I really, really appreciate your comments and for you coming on and sharing your thoughts and your wisdom with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. So is there anyone else? We're end of our hour. Is there anyone else that would that has a statement, a comment, question, insights on our topic for this evening that would like to speak? Well, again, I appreciate each and every one of you for being a part of this event tonight. It has been such a pleasure to talk and to explore this whole realm of falsehoods and the little white lies and the pretentious truth that we put out here and that we live every day, and how it just overflows one thing to another, to another, to another area in our lives. And if we can just now take what we've heard, share tonight, mm-hmm. and apply it to any part of our existence, that would be absolutely incredible. Again, I thank you, I thank you, I thank you for being a part. Love, Life, and Wellness, where we talk candidly about positive experiences, personal development, self-discovery, and holistic wellness. When we love ourselves, we cause no danger to anyone, and we are at peace and harmony with all of humanity. Thank you again. Look forward to seeing you on the next call.
Bye. Bye.